Have you ever read the story, The Egg?
I've eaten several eggs. I've even passed a few through my vagina.
Are we?
I
just Gallagher'd all over the soundboard here.
I may be coming to a point where I'm running out of eggs.
Are we recording right now?
Yeah.
That's it. That was perfect.
Okay.
But to you and anybody listening, read the short story of the egg. It's really fascinating and thought-provoking.
Was it written by the chicken?
As it was crossing the road.
Oh, the egg. Do you think the egg is stuck in Texas? Or just Mitch and Kelly.
By the way, we have some really great artwork coming for the podcast for Stuck in Texas. We're just waiting because it's free. So it's going to take some time to get to us.
So we're like at 3 months. For free artwork, is it like a 6 month turnaround?
You know what? It's whenever they get it to you because it's free.
I could just make us something using clip art. It could be a picture of an egg.
You know what you could do? You could stitch us something. You could do like, what was it called? Cross stitching? I know you're, like, really handy.
Richard thinks I'm handy.
Oh, boy. Okay. Why has it always got to get perverted with you? I swear, you have such a dirty mind. You're always working blue.
Working blue?
Yes. Blue is in reference to being dirty.
Oh, I thought it was, like, a Crips reference.
No, it's not. You're on fire today. I've been a very good teacher. You're even getting good on the quick wit banter. Also, I just looked over and saw your charging cable for your iPhone. When is your birthday?
I just had one. It was like a week ago.
I'm going to have to get you a belated present. That is a fire hazard. Someone's going to get electrocuted with that thing.
I've accidentally touched it, and it does shock.
It doesn't really? That would be the first sign. I would immediately get on Amazon.
So I usually have another one in my car, but my kid took it. So when I went out to my truck to get a cable, it was this or nothing.
Oh, so I would have gone with nothing.
You just freeball it?
Well, who's going first today?
I think you should.
All right. I'm not really looking for advice today.
You just want to tell me a story?
Well, no, not really.
Is it about an egg?
See, that's not going to make sense because the egg thing comes at the end in the special feature.
So the chicken came first.
Yep. I want an honest critique. We're not just partners on the radio.
Right.
We are friends in real life.
IRL.
And we are there for each other.
Absolutely.
One day your dogs needed to be let out.
Yep.
And I was there for you.
For sure.
This weekend, two things happened. I needed to go do another podcast. Sorry.
Which
don't get jealous.
Which I heard, and you at no point promoted our podcast. What in the hell? Mitch, I listened to the end. I'm like, surely he's going to promote it at some point.
I was drunk. I got so drunk on that podcast. But anyway, so I needed help watching Billy, and you were there for me.
Sure.
You watched her for a couple hours.
I love me some Billy.
And then yesterday, the babysitter canceled on me like last minute. And so I was in a bind.
How is it even okay that babysitters are like, hey, I know that I agreed to do this thing and I'm watching your child when there's no other option while you go to work, but I'm just going to say F off, you know, 2 hours before.
Well, in her defense, you know, it was an emergency. I had to take somebody to the emergency room. And she said, like, I can pick Billy up. And I can take her there with us, or I can come get her afterwards. And the afterwards would have been about 6 p.m., which is like halfway through my work shift. So I could have either found another.
So she tried to make it work.
Yeah, she tried.
And you're like, I don't want to send my under 2 daughter to an emergency room where there's a bunch of sick people.
But also, like, she has a child that's a little bit younger than Billy. So, like, that's a lot.
It's a lot just to go to the emergency on your own.
Yes, and now she's going to have her toddler and mine and the family member who's having some kind of medical issue. So I was like, look, I'll figure it out. But anyway, to get past that, like, you were there for me.
Sure.
So you watched Billy, you and your husband, because he helped out as well. Y'all watched Billy from about 2:30 until 10:30.
Right.
So that's 8 hours. So with the day before and then yesterday, you've got to spend a lot of time with Billy.
Uh-huh.
And I would just, you know, like a critique, everything positive, everything negative that you're seeing that we have done and the outcome of it with this child.
So, Billy, I could just follow her around and listen to her all day because she's just learning to talk coherently and she has the world's sweetest voice. So you walk around behind Billy and you hear, "Oh, wow, puppy, that's nice." And then you say anything and she just comes back at you. I'm like, "Let's put this here. Put here." And it's just the sweetest thing. It's like having a little fairy princess echo.
I'll tell you what's like the funnest thing for me is when you hear something for the first time. Like, because she's listening to you and she's absorbing this stuff. And so today I was putting some shoes on her and, you know, we've had them for a while. She just said, "Too tight."
Oh, wow.
"Too tight." And I was like, "Oh, these shoes are too tight. Well, let's go get another pair." And the things with her vagina are very funny to me. And so I put baby powder on her.
Right.
And I'm a big guy. You get a lot of chafing.
So you use Gold Bond?
No. I actually use baby powder because a while back I heard that baby powder has a pleasant smell to the ladies.
Ooh, the ladies.
So if you're wearing it and you walk by a woman and they sense that baby powder, they're like, "Oh, I got to follow this guy around.
I'm lactating."
Yeah. No, that's not it. That's fluids coming from the wrong body parts. But anyway, I know how good baby powder feels. So I would sprinkle a little baby powder on her, and I'd be like, "That nice? It feels good." And so day before yesterday, I sprinkled some baby powder on her, and she goes, "Ooh, nice."
So on the topic of your daughter talking,
mm-hmm.
So we're coming from the scout meeting, going back home, and there's this one really long light. And I was like, "Oh, it's been green for a while. I better take it up like, you know, 2 miles and hopefully I'll be able to get through the green." So I push the gas. It becomes clear there's going to be a yellow light. I don't run through yellow lights. I stop at them. So I
never spend any time in L.A., obviously.
So I push on the brake and from the back here I hear, "Oh, God."
I don't think I've heard that.
And my husband, you know, that's like, he's really weird about taking the Lord's name in vain. So he's like, "Oh, goodness."
You know what's funny about that is we watch Hometown on Discovery Plus, and they must have a rule that they tell. They're very religious. So they must have a rule because everyone that's on the show, whenever the big reveal is, they always go like, "Oh, my gosh. Oh, my goodness." Like, they never say, "Oh, God." Like, I'm assuming that they do it, and then the people say that, and they're like, "Hey, let's take it back. We got to, oh, my goodness. We got to, oh, my gosh, this scene."
We're going to voice over this, and...
But that's funny, because everybody has their things, right?
Right, for
like,
sure, yeah.
So, like I told you, you told me that yesterday, that she said, "Oh, God," and I'm like, I'm just glad she didn't add anything... At the end of that, like, Richard's ears would have started bleeding.
So the other thing that she did was adorable is yesterday I finished editing the last podcast that we recorded. And after I do that, before they're published, Richard gets to hear everything. So I take it home on my thumb drive. I play it. And we have in-ceiling speakers. Your daughter walked underneath one of the speakers, looked straight up and was like, "Dada, dada, dada." It was so cute.
Well, she just spent 4 days alone with me where it's just my voice. That was probably like trying to get you to turn it off. Like, I'm tired of hearing this dude. You know, like, let's get some mommy on the speakers.
From an auditory standpoint, your child's hearing is phenomenal. Like, she was able to pick it out directionally.
I don't see that because I tell her to stop and tell her to quit doing things, and I say her name to get her attention, and it's like she doesn't hear a single word that I'm saying. So
it must be my voice.
Maybe that's what it is.
Yeah, that's it.
It was fun. You kept me updated. You were sending me pictures and stuff. And she's a little daredevil, huh?
She is amazing.
And it's fun. Like, I do things with her, and I let her do things on her own all the time with no concern. But then, like, you sent me the video of her going up the stairs with Richard. And this is a big flight of stairs, which I have done, and I've let her do on her own. Like, there was over at one of the nurseries where they sell plants and stuff like that, there was a huge slide, like probably 10 feet tall.
Are you talking about Smith's Garden Town?
Yes. Who did not sponsor this episode. But, hey, go there. Tell them you heard them on Stuck in Texas. Maybe I'll get a deal on some rose bushes or something. But she climbed up this ladder, and then she slid down the slide by herself. And I had no qualms about it at all. I said 10 foot. It was probably like 8 foot because I could reach her at the top. But the video that you sent me, Richard is behind her. He's got his hands around her hips. You know, he's like guarding her going up.
Right.
And still, I was like, oh, God.
Your ball sucked into your body.
Yes.
Like, I get it. I actually questioned whether to send you that video. And to be honest, the first time she did it, you and I were on the phone. So I had to have her do it again so I could video it.
And she loves climbing stairs. Like, that's something that I do with her all the time. I've put stuff in the backyard, like a little climbing wall and a cargo net that she can climb up and go.
Yeah, your dog loves it.
She, yes. But Billy also loves it. Well, I get nervous when she's up there and then the dog jumps up there with her because I'm like, I know he loves her and he wants to be with her.
But Duke.
No. Clumsy. He's gonna knock her off. And so that was really fun to see. And then also, when you have a kid and someone is offering to take care of them, I realized yesterday, because you were asking me about stuff and I said no to something, and then I came back inside like 5 minutes later and I was like, hey, if you're gonna do that, just, you gotta let go sometimes. And so Lee
Wait,
and I,
can we talk about the questionable behavior that I was?
Yeah, I'm gonna
tabling. Okay,
I'm gonna say what it was. I was just I was teasing it a little.
Tease away.
But so Lee and I are pretty strict on what she eats. We're not that strict on what I eat, but I don't want my daughter making the same mistakes I did. So we don't really do anything with high fructose corn syrup. We stay away from a lot of the sweets. But yesterday, you asked, is there anything she can't eat? And you had some McDonald's french fries in your hands. And I said, McDonald's, which isn't true. I take her to McDonald's just about every Saturday, but I was being silly. And then you asked if you could go take her for ice cream. And I was like, nah, I don't like really want her to eat ice cream today. And I went outside, like, putting stuff in the car. And then I go, yeah, don't be ridiculous. So I came back inside, and I was like, hey, this is your time with her. If you want to take her to get some ice cream, like, for one, you're buying her love. I get it.
That's right.
But if you want to do that when you're, like, helping out and spending all this time, yeah. You know, like, this is your time to care for her and play with her and have fun. Like, you know, we can let go of some things. Let loose.
Right.
So did y'all go get ice cream?
No. I was like, Mitch clearly does not want this to happen.
No, and it, like, because I do the same stuff sometimes. Like, I do things that I'm not supposed to because...
Like, I had just left the house from eating salads with Richard, and I drove through McDonald's and got a large french fry.
Wait, is that, like, you know, some people will, sneak around and smoke.
It's McDonald's french fries.
Or whatever. Like, is the McDonald's french fries your... You know, that's probably why the skin around your neck is...
But the best part about my sneaking around with McDonald's is I order on the app, which is connected to our credit card.
Oh,
so
Lord.
Every time I get french fries, it just pops up on his phone.
Also, you eat it in his car, and there's no way you don't drop a french fry every now and then.
That's my truck.
No, I'm the car. I've been with you in his car when we've got McDonald's.
You know what? You're right. And we not only got McDonald's delicious french fries, we got McDonald's disgusting chicken nuggets. And we ate all of them.
McDonald's is not a sponsor of this podcast.
We ate all of them. And his car smelled like barbecue sauce for like 2 days after that. It's just four comedians in a car eating nuggies.
No, my wife was in the car.
She's funny. I call her a comedian.
Yeah, that was a blast. But look, I do the same. Like, I bought some Hunt's Brothers pizzas, which, by the way, is crazy. This stuff is in the gas station. It is the best pizza that you can get next to, like a Firestone pizza or whatever, right? Or, like, the pizzas that you guys make at home because you have your own pizza oven. But this Hunt's Brothers pizza is absolutely delicious. And I'll get two slices of it. And I eat it in the car on the way home, and I stop at a gas station and throw the evidence away so that she doesn't know. Like, I don't know if she's aware that I've ever eaten this stuff.
That's funny.
Because she makes me so self-conscious. We were on a road trip. We were driving somewhere, and I bought a gas station hot dog or a corn dog. She was like, I didn't know anybody actually bought these things.
I'll buy them and eat them before I leave the gas station.
Yes. If I'm pumping gas, I'm eating that corn dog because, you know, the corn dog is hard to get the ketchup and mustard on without spilling.
So it's true.
You don't want to be driving with that.
You don't. It's a biohazard.
I'm pumping gas with the right hand, and I'm eating corn dog with the left hand. I go to cheap gas stations that don't have the automatic lock on the handle. Overall, your experience with Billy.
I love it.
It was good. She was well behaved for a toddler.
She was great. And she gives the dogs kisses, which is hilarious.
Yeah, it's so with ours, like we feel comfortable with it. And I know your dogs are good too, but like I really have to, well, she sees one at the farmer's market or something. I got to be like, hey, you have to ask to pet.
Right.
You know, don't get in their face. Like,
right.
There's like things that you have to teach them that aren't okay with every dog.
We taught ours to ask and then present the hand and then see what the dog wants to do.
That's smart. That way the dog bites the hand first before anything else.
So I will tell you, we went on a walk to the lake and we were passing somebody with dogs and your kid threw a fit because she's like, puppies. And then we walked past the puppies and she's like, what in the hell? Why didn't I get to snuggle those furry faces?
And that's actually one of her best sentences. What the hell?
And by the way, I have been trying to teach your daughter the proper names of our dogs. There's Stitch, which she says, Stitch. And then there's Red Rum, which she can't wrap her head around.
Yeah.
But I think when your daughter starts saying Red Rum, I'm going to have the best content videos ever.
Red Rum. She has Duke down. But she says Duke no or Duke off because he likes to jump up in our laps and I'm constantly pushing him away. And then Lucky, she calls Yucky. She's like, Yucky. And I'm like, that's kind of mean, but it is cute.
It's also adorable.
Well, I'm glad that you had a good time with her. And I also, like, it just, like, thank you so much.
Oh, of course.
Like, it is, this is one thing that you learn about being a parent as you're being a parent. And that is, it is hard. We're away from family.
Yes.
And I know you were a lot, too.
Well, we were 100% away.
So when you're away from family, you don't have the benefit of dropping your kid off at grandma's house.
It's true.
That family is a big support system that we don't have. So we're lucky that we got such amazing friends that were able to help us out. And then weren't available, you were there.
I was like, you'll have to introduce me to them.
Honestly, like, thank you so much. I was able to go get drunk on a podcast.
And by the way, you were hilarious. Hilarious.
Oh, on the podcast or when you got home? Yeah, I... Oh, poor Billy. I got her out of bed. my wife's been gone for 4 days. I'm drunk. I'm lonely. And I was like, you're going to have to come snuggle with daddy.
Like, I just use the dogs. I'm like, at my house.
I'm not allowed to have the dogs on the bed.
Okay. That's fair.
Honestly, I'm not allowed to have Billy in the bed either because we don't want to encourage co-sleeping.
Right.
But, you know, sometimes I got to break the rules. But... It's funny. In my mind, it's always a great idea. I'm gonna go to sleep with my little girl. I'm going to hold her in my arm. I'm going to cuddle with her. It's going to be great.
How's that work out?
Well, around 2 a.m., I'm reminded what an asshole she is in the bed. Because through the night, she goes from head up at the headboard to head down at the end of the bed.
She rotates like a clock.
And she, yeah, actually, that's a perfect, because it is about 6 hours. And she goes halfway through.
But, what time is it? I could check the sun or just look at Billy.
Yeah. But as she's turning feet towards me. You know, once she gets to about 3 o'clock, she's putting her heels into my rib cage. And then when she's down to about 5, her feet are up at my face. And just like, she's a very aggressive sleeper. And she's kicking her. It's like she's dreaming about swimming or something.
Awesome.
And she's just kicking me in the face. And I'm just like, I'm thinking in my head, like, why did I think this is a good, every time she does this, and still I'm like, she looks so, she doesn't move in her bed, by the way.
This is what bourbon does to you. It makes you think things you know are bad ideas are good ideas.
Well, she, you know, she was happy. She woke up and she was like, Daddy! And I was like, ugh, get away from me.
Why is your breath smell funny?
No, I tried to wake up and brush my teeth before. Can't have any evidence. It's like my favorite scene from, I think it's School of Rock, where he comes in, he's hungover, and he's like, I'm hungover, do you know what that means? And they're like, it means you're drunk. And he goes, no, it means I was drunk last night. Now don't bother me.
He is such an interesting guy. I love Jack Black.
But yeah, anyway, so I'm glad you had fun. That's good to know. You want your kids to be a good representation of you as a parent.
She also sticks everything in her mouth. I think she might be teething.
She has a full set of teeth. She's drooling a lot, though, right now, so I think you're right.
Maybe some molars or...
Yeah.
Like two-year molars?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know if that's a thing.
But it has to be because she drooled into my mouth today.
Oh, gross.
I picked her up to do, like, the airplane thing.
Oh, yeah.
And I was looking, and I was like, yay! And, like, as I'm going, yay! Just a 5-inch string of drool just goes right into my mouth. And Lee is sitting over to the side and watching it. She sees the whole thing. And Lee's just like, ha, 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 she gotcha!
I love it. So for comedy this week, we decided that we would watch and then talk about a particular comedy special.
I need to ask you something.
Yes.
Are you lying to me right now? Did you do something wrong? Did you not go through with the assignment? Because you squint and your right eye starts twitching. And I'm wondering if that... You're also supposedly a good poker player. But if that's your poker face, I'd call you bluff every time. Did you realize you were doing that?
There's an imaginary kaleidoscope that I'm trying to look through right now.
But yeah, so I wanted us to watch and review the Blue Collar Comedy Tour because it is these four guys who are supposedly in the same genre of comedy, if that you can even classify things like that. But
the way that you said that, why don't we explore that a little bit more?
Well, okay, so it's the Blue Collar Comedy Tour. So it's... It was clearly designed for Southerners, but blue collar is like your labor skilled workers, your
right.
plumbers, your construction guys, things like that. Or Rosie the Riveter women who are out there working in the Boeing factory. You know, it's for people like that. But also, you know, it's also code for white people. Because if you look at that crowd, a whole lot of white people. But it's, you know, it's comedy for the... For the every man.
Every man.
Yes, you know, like, but also that doesn't mean every man. It means your regular guys or whatever you want to call it. Blue collar. Like I said, it could have also just been called the Southern Comedy Tour. But they didn't want to pigeonhole themselves to the South, you know. But you have Ron White, Bill Engvall, Larry the Cable Guy, and Jeff Foxworthy.
Yes.
And they're all categorized as blue collar. Did you notice who the host was with them?
Looked like I'm going to edit this out. It was a gay black man.
He's not gay. You don't have to edit this out. You're describing what you saw. But from In Living Color.
Okay.
David Alan Greer.
No way.
Yes.
Holy crap. Because this is like 20 years old, right?
Yes, it is. And it's funny because this is a time where these guys did sketches before each one of their sets. And the opening credits is they're out fishing on a boat.
Right.
David Alan Greer pulls up in the limousine, and he's not the driver. He's in the back with them. I want to make that clear. They're not painting it as the black dude is working for them.
Right, but the black man is in the back of the vehicle.
Yes, you know, not. But it's not a bus. It's a limousine. That's acceptable.
That's just a classy bus.
So they...
It's a bus with a bar.
A bus with a bar? That's a party bus. Still different than a limousine. But he's yelling at them, and he's like, come on, guys, we're running late. And so then they get to the venue, and he's like, hey, I got you guys some new clothes. And it's like Zoot Suit. It's like he went and robbed Steve Harvey's wardrobe. And so they get dressed in these very colorful suits, and then he walks in with a plaid shirt and a cowboy hat, and he's like, hey, what are you guys dressed like that for? And they're like, you got us, or whatever. But then, like I was saying, they do sketches before each one, where Ron comes out first. They were obviously going from, like, the lesser known to the strongest performer at the time.
I thought Ron White's performance was the strongest.
Yes, for sure. He was a touring headliner at one point, but for comedy clubs. So he was more the lesser known guy at this point.
That blows my mind.
But if you were watching it for the first time, you know, they're all dressed like rednecks or whatever. He comes out in a black suit, smoking a cigar, drinking scotch. He's like the Johnny Cash. He's the rock star of the group. And I really feel like it like set him apart, you know? But I don't want to narrate this whole thing. So I want to talk to you a little bit, right? Let's get what you saw. I want to ask you, even though this is a tour of the same genre.
Yes.
What did you think about their styles?
So one of the first things I noticed was Ron White endeared himself immediately to me. He is just so damn charming.
Yes.
And his delivery is so casual, but he has word efficiency that is insane.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't waste any words. Everything he says, it sounds casual, like you're just having a conversation, but it's so well crafted.
Yes. And what would you say he's talking about during his set? You know, we've discussed like the different types of material.
Have we?
We had, where we were talking about like the evergreen versus the observational, things like that.
I feel like he's great at like self-deprecating humor. Like,
okay, so he's talking about himself.
For sure.
He's talking about his personal experiences, right? Mm-hmm. So he opens, one. I think like his second joke was, they're in Phoenix, Arizona.
Right.
And he goes, I flew here from Flagstaff because my manager doesn't own
a globe.
And then he talks about, I flew out of the Flagstaff airport tire shop.
Beauty
salon. And so he's taking all his personal experiences and making jokes about that, right?
Right.
So he's like a firsthand account storyteller.
For sure.
Then next comes Larry. But the thing I want to ask you about Larry, the sketch before his performance.
Was that the Victoria's Secret one?
Yes. But I also believe it was the one with... Okay, yes, you're right. That was the Victoria's Secret one. It led into one of his jokes, right?
Right.
And what style of comedy do you think Larry's doing?
He's silly.
Right, he's absurd. He's more... He's just all made up and fanciful, right?
I believe that I could see him on a pontoon boat or on a four-wheeler or whatever. But when he's telling stories, I'm always side-eyeing him, kind of like, and then he'll get me. He always gets me with these, like, tricky punchlines at the end where he sort of flips something upside down. And I like that about him, but I don't find any of his jokes personally memorable.
Right. Like, so that's what I was, like, thinking about while I was watching it, was, like, what is this person saying that stands out to me the most, right? So Larry's, the one that got me, was he's talking about women's underbreeches. Which I think is funny that he uses the term under britches.
Repeatedly.
Yes. He's talking about Victoria's Secret. They sell under britches with holes in them. It was like, a woman's going to wear those, and she's going to be like, hey, you want some of this? I'm going to be like, heck no, look at what it did to your under britches. You know? So it's all silly. It's funny because his style of comedy, that character was developed on the radio. On the radio, you got to be kind of absurd and outlandish.
I'll keep that in mind.
Right. Well, I mean, you're not a character, you know, but but when you're calling in and you're doing like the news reports or whatever.
Right.
You got to be kind of
big.
Yes.
Larger than life.
Really like put that image in people's heads.
Absurd, because you have such a limited amount of time in one of those sketches.
His name is Dan Whitney, and his stand-up was not originally like that. But he went to perform in Florida, and on the marquee, they had his radio personality, Larry the Cable Guy. He told me, he was like, hey, that's not what I do for it. And they were like, look, just, you know, do your act, but be sure you do some Larry the Cable Guy while you're up there, because these people love it. And he saw the marquee like earlier that day.
Right.
And then when he showed up, there was a line around the comedy club waiting to get in.
That's amazing.
And then that's when he was like,
this might be something.
My name is Larry now. He, at that time, so he was the third biggest of them. Then comes Bill. Now, this is why I was thinking this sketch was before Larry's, because he's the one I want to ask you about. The sketch before Bill's performance. You remember what it was?
No.
It's when they go to the spa.
Oh, yes.
There were some things done on that if they did it today, this thing would have been canceled during production. You know, they have a woman getting a mud bath, and they're like showering her with water, and they walk in because they're getting a tour of the facility.
Right.
Larry goes, what? This is some kind of like fancy wet T-shirt contest. And then he takes money out and he starts throwing dollar bills on this random woman getting a mud bath. And then they go into a room where a woman is getting a massage. And Larry's like, look, get out of the way. This is not how you do it. And he starts like chopping on her back and rubbing her. And it's like, people would lose their minds if they did this now. Like, you watch it and it is funny. But with the culture today, you know, you're like, geez, man. Like, I can't believe they've put this on a movie.
It didn't even stand out to me.
That's so funny. Like, maybe I've just been around a certain part of the culture for such a long time where everything is offensive.
Well, and it's not just that. Like, you look at it, it's clearly staged, right?
Yes,
absolutely. So it's just like seeing anything else in a movie or a TV show where it's fake.
Yep, but you know, it's the intent, and they're not showing.
And the intent was Larry the Cable Guy got to touch some woman's naked back.
Yeah, I think the intent was that Larry is a buffoon,
right?
And that's what they're showing. But it's like, here's what's funny about comedy: if you write a drama,
okay,
and you have a person performing as a rapist or a serial killer or whatever, that performance will be like lauded. If that's the right word, where people are like, that was such a wonderful play. It was believable. It was dark and like whatever.
Absolutely.
They separate the role from the performer.
Right.
If you are a comedian, the problem is that you are you. And regardless of your intent in telling a joke or trying to, like, I'm very, like, sometimes I will play a misogynist in my act because I think that kind of behavior is ridiculous. But when taken out of context or, you know, someone not realizing that I'm making fun of that behavior, they will just go, Mitch is a male chauvinist pig. He has no respect for women or something like that, you know.
And here's my evidence.
Yes, exactly. I thought you were actually about to provide something to make me look bad.
I mean, I don't actually record your conversations with Lee, but if I did.
That's different because she's my wife.
Right.
And I have a legal right to disrespect her. But it's just interesting because as a comedian, you will get held to a different set, like form of accountability because you can't play those characters humorously. Even though you're being satirical and you're criticizing it, if you say a word... Leonardo DiCaprio said the N-word 20 times in Django.
Right.
But he was playing a bad dude. Shane Gillis was doing a podcast where they were making fun of old white people when Asians started moving into Chinatown.
Okay.
He used racial derogatory words towards Asian people while he was pretending to be these ignorant, racist, old white people.
So while he was being a character.
But he got canceled from being able to be on Saturday Night Live because people took those clips and played it as Shane Gillis is racist against Asian people.
Okay, so that clears up a lot of things because your episode of Kill Tony right before you moved here, what was that, 525?
I don't remember.
I think it's 525 is you and Shane Gillis.
Uh-huh. So Tony went out on stage and said something about the Asian performer before him.
Right.
And then Shane had this whole controversy earlier that year.
So what did you do to be in that little man sandwich?
Nothing, but the first thing that I said was it was an honor to be with them because this is during hashtag Stop Asian Hate. I go, it's such an honor to be up here with you guys because no one has brought more attention to Stop Asian Hate than the two of you.
Perfect.
And Shane was like, oh man, you're a snake. He was like, we was hanging out in the green, you're cool. Now the first thing you're going to do is bring that up. And I was like, I just really admire what you've done for the movement. You know? But like, honestly, it's just crazy that...
That's the episode where Shane drank you under the table, right?
See, I don't know why people say that because I drank way more than him.
I'm not sure. Seems like
it's not a competition. Okay, even though I said before the show that it was
everything,
gonna be a competition.
Yeah, everything's a competition. That's the quote I remember from you.
Anyway, so all I'm saying is the stuff that Larry did in that sketch would have been, like, really frowned upon today, even though you saw no problem with it.
I had no problem with it.
I also find you extremely offensive at times.
So. It's true. And you do announce it every time that I do offend you. Which, hey, honestly, I just take as motivation to continue offending you.
I mean, we can't learn unless our faults are pointed out to us. Just like you, I'd say that you are offending me and you constantly tell me how fat I am. So you're trying to help me be a healthier person and I'm trying to help you be a better person.
Hmm. Potato.
Potato? Are you saying like I should cut down on my carbs?
I'm the one who has the McDonald's french fry addiction.
So Bill Engvall's style.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say this was more of?
I would say out of all of them, his style was...
He's my least favorite, by the way.
Mine too. I would say it's the most forgettable.
Okay, that's good.
Like, I watched it this morning before work, and I can't tell you one of his jokes.
I can, because it goes so... I think he's a little obvious in what he's saying. There's not a lot of what I call left turns, where you think it's going one way, and then it hits you with something different, right?
That's what Larry does.
He's a little bit more observational, where he's looking at the world.
The one with his daughter driving. That's one of his.
But he also talks about his own personal stories. Another thing where I'm like, you cannot do this today. He talks about, I can't remember what his ailment. Oh, he's trying to quit smoking.
Right.
And his wife suggests acupuncture.
Right.
And so he goes to a Asian acupuncturist. And during the story, when he's quoting her, he is doing the worst, most offensive Asian accent that you have ever heard. And this theater, no, it's an arena. They're at an arena in Flagstaff that is filled with white audience members, is eating it up and laughing. And if that was shown today, just once again, a thing that would have ended that tour. Now, I'm sure there would be a bunch of people who would be like, cancel culture sucks, and they would support them even more.
Right.
But I think that because this was like the entertainment industry, like really putting something out there, like they would have been told like, hey man, you can't do that joke. This is going, you know, national or whatever.
Right. I did like the part of his joke where he's like, I tried the gum, but it was hard to keep it lit.
Yeah, he has some good lines.
The patch just ripped the skin off my lips.
But he, yeah, it's, it is where he's like just not understanding how these things work. And I liked during the acupuncture thing, well, all he wanted was
a cigarette
to calm down from the acupuncture. But he was the second most famous at the time because...
Here's your sign.
That was his big thing. It's funny that catchphrases were a big part. Ron White didn't have one.
No.
But Larry's was get her done. His was here's your sign. And then finally we get to the main guy.
You might be a redneck.
Jeff Foxworthy. He might be a redneck. Now, Jeff, what was your opinion of him?
He looks like all of my nephews in that he's just this skinny little country boy.
Yeah.
I felt like he was the most authentic. Like, I don't feel like Larry is authentically who he is when he gets up there. I feel like Ron is.
Yeah, Larry's definitely a character for sure.
For sure.
And Ron is definitely, at that time, he was definitely a drunk.
And I feel like Jeff Foxworthy was authentically Jeff Foxworthy. And he's sweet. He's doing his stuff with a smile on his face. The stuff that he's saying is entertaining and funny, but it doesn't hit hard ever the same way like Ron White's somehow had those little icy jabs in there.
I think maybe it doesn't hit hard for you, but I think that what he does is so iconic.
Oh, like, for sure.
The crowd is the Southern words and the you might be a redneck. That is why those people went to that show. And he was the biggest Southern comedian up until this tour. We'll talk about this a little bit more in a second, but he was the reason that they were there,
right,
for the most part.
And I also love that these people that he was touring with were people that he came up with in the comedy industry.
He definitely, like, brought them up into what he was doing, too. Like, he called Larry. Ron White, at this point, was kind of away from comedy. He burnt a lot of bridges, and he was in Mexico at the time selling pottery or something, like some crazy thing like that.
And how did he burn these bridges? I hope, like, with explosives. I hope he wasn't, like, just slow burning.
Yeah, it was explosive for sure. Allegedly, because I don't know for sure, although there was, like, one or two firsthand accounts that he told me hanging out at the comedy store. But allegedly, he had sex with a lot of the wait staff, comedy clubs throughout the country. And unless you're like me and you get her pregnant and get married, that never really turns out well, because they, when you make them feel used, they have a relationship with the comedy club where they're like, don't ever bring this guy back here. And so, you know, he was just a rock star comedian at the time and living his life like that. But comedians don't get the same benefits of being a rock star. Where
as
when you don't
actual
call them
rock
back,
stars.
Yeah, when you don't call them back, they kind of hold a grudge. So, yeah, he had just burnt some bridges and kind of stepped away for a while. And then Jeff called him up and asked him to do this tour. You know, now he has private planes. He revitalized and took his career to a place. And Larry, okay, so this is, you know, when they show the behind the scenes, the thing that led up to Jeff's performance wasn't a sketch of them doing anything. It was them interviewing the people at the arena about their favorite Jeff Foxworthy joke, their favorite You Might Be a Redneck joke.
Right.
Because that's who they were there to see.
Everyone in that sketch looked like someone from my graduating class. The fashion was on point.
Yeah. Again, blue collar. They were appealing to a very specific audience. You know, when David Alan Greer walked out on stage to start the show, a lot of those people were like, what? I think we came to the wrong venue.
He was the only black man there.
Yeah. But yeah, David, I'm sure he crushed it. Because as soon as Ron walks out on stage, they're like, woo! You know, he hyped them up. But anyway, so Jeff calls Larry and asks him to do this. And Larry was the second one on the bill, so he's not the one that everyone's there to see. A few people were really excited to see him, because when he walked out, you see in this crowd of like thousands of people, two or three people stand up when he gets out there. Well, for the next one, there's another special called the Blue Collar Comedy Tour Rides Again.
Okay.
They had to put a sketch at the beginning where they're all on the tour bus and they say they're going to draw numbers for the lineup to see who closes out the show. Because after the Blue Collar Comedy Tour, Larry eclipsed everyone else.
Right.
He became the major star, and they couldn't just say that. So they have him pull numbers so that Larry gets the last number.
Right.
And, you know, he's like, oh, man, I hate having to be the one to close it out or whatever. But it is simply because after his set, everyone else is going to be like, man, we really going to hang out for the rest of them?
We really going to see Jeff Foxworthy?
Again? Let me guess,
you might be a redneck.
Yeah, they've had like 15 years of this. But Larry did that. And then Larry goes on, he's on his own tour doing arenas. You know, he's doing shows that only the top 1% of comedians ever get to do.
Right.
And so it was just fun because he was actually talking to Jeff in like an interview, and he goes, yeah, sometimes you bring somebody up and then they get even bigger than you. Ain't that right, Jeff? You know, just like, yeah, all right, well, you have me to thank for a lot of that, don't you?
Right.
But overall, this special is probably 20 years old, right? Like, overall, what did you think about it? Does it hold up?
I was entertained from beginning to end, and, you know, I would say, for me, the first one that I had experience with was Jeff Foxworthy, his You Might Be a Redneck, way back in the day, mm-hmm. and then Larry the Cable Guy is endeared in my heart because he's the voice of Mater, which was my son's. That was my son's go-to movie.
Yeah.
Like, we had two DVDs of the car movie because if we happened to misplace one, life would end.
Well, now, so my wife and I are endeared to Harlan Williams because he created Puppy Pals.
Nice.
And my daughter, that's on Disney Junior or whatever. My daughter loves Puppy Pals every day. Puppy Pals?
That's so cute.
And so we have to watch that, and Harlan's one of the voices of the people on that show. So I get that for sure.
For me, when I first saw that special, which wasn't today, the first time I saw it was quite a while ago. It was the first time I saw Ron White, and I was like, holy shit. Because I had never seen anything like a Ron White.
Yeah.
He was new to me, and he didn't have a gimmick. He was just straightforward funny.
Authentic.
And so coming back and watching this again with time and space between, everything just holds up.
Mm-hmm.
So I enjoyed the entire special beginning to end.
You know what's funny? What's interesting about it shows you something about merchandise. Because Ron eventually came up with a slogan, which is, you can't fix stupid. So you got Jeff, you might be a redneck, tons of merchandise selling that slogan on clothes. Bill Engvall,
Here's your sign,
and it's the yellow, like the baby on board sticker, right?
Man, that's a day gone by.
And that, here's your sign, selling that merchandise. Larry, probably the biggest catchphrase ever.
Get her done.
They're probably selling hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of merch on this tour, and Ron doesn't have anything, really.
It's so like, you want to buy a cigar?
Yeah. So, you know, now he has number one tequila. That's his merchandise now. But he comes up with, you can't fix stupid, and then you put that on his shirt, and now you're making all that extra money. So
he's sober, though, isn't he?
He is now, yes, but he wasn't for a long time. He just mentioned that on Joe Rogan's podcast, how he quit drinking so much. And hopefully, you know, he sticks with it because he's older, and that will catch up to you.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like it might be what's preserving him. Who am I to say? I'm not a doctor.
It's like, what is it that the morgue puts in your vein?
It's embalming fluid.
Yeah.
I think he'll age like 30 years in the next month.
It's like he became president.
He finally knows what he's saying. He's like, damn.
Here's what I want to take away from this. That thing about finding your voice. I think this is such a good representation of that, because even though this is the same genre, each one of these guys is very different in their material and how they talk and how they represent themselves. Then that is something that you find, I've said before, after years of doing it. But as you become more and more comfortable with who you are on stage, that voice comes out. And I just think that it's clear. There's no right or wrong way to perform.
Did you say Wong?
I did, but
are you,
you know,
going to say that in a bad Asian accent?
No, but
do you want me to get a button for cancel?
Just have
writer Wong.
That's the cancellation bell. Every time one of us says something offensive.
Damn it, that's unfair. You're just going to ring that every time I say anything.
Yeah. I think that, obviously, there's no wrong way to perform. Because each one of these guys have a different way, and they have all become huge stars, millions upon millions of dollars, based off of their own personality and act. And you just got to find that yourself.
I think something I admire about all four performers is all four of them gave clean performances.
Oh, yeah. So the next one that we're going to watch and break down is the original Kings of Comedy.
Okay.
That's Bernie Mac, Cedric the Entertainer, D.L. Hughley, and I think there's one more on that. Let me just check real quick.
Sure.
Oh, yeah, Steve Harvey. I'm such an idiot. So I had to look it up. I watch Steve Harvey every day at 9 o'clock on The Family Feud.
He's so
and
funny.
There's another guy. I know there is.
Who could it be?
This is, so Blue Collar was rated PG-13. The original Kings of Comedy is rated R.
Okay.
And so you're going to see two different genres. Some would call it urban comedy, but we're looking at black celebrity comedians. These were four of the biggest names. That wasn't like Chris Rock or Eddie Murphy, you know, but these were huge.
Four biggins.
Yes.
B-N's, big black names.
Okay, thank God. I was I was worried where that was going. But again, they each have their own way, but I would love to compare it to what we just watched.
For sure.
So let's do that next week.
I like it. Closing out comedy, I did an open mic last night, and I got some laughs, which is great because there was like one person that wasn't a comedian there. So that's always fun.
And you're like going up and doing like new stuff every time, which is, you know, you're obviously still doing some material that you've already written because you want to work on it and get it as good as you can. But you also have that pressure of performing in front of the same comedians almost every week. So you're trying to bring new stuff each time.
Well, that's somewhat for them, but it's mostly for me. If I figure if I write 5 solid minutes a month, like if I can get 5 minutes down every month, mm-hmm. I've got an hour at the end of the year. I don't know why that matters to me, but it seems like a good goal to work towards. So I am trying. And so that means that every week I've got to write like a minute and a half and work through it.
And I think what you'll see is once you get to the end of that year and you have an hour of material, it's really going to boil down to about 15 minutes.
And that's fair and fine.
And that is great because then you're going to be able to comfortably perform on a showcase and really shine. And honestly, before you ever really do anything big is usually like 3 to 6 years. And you've had like 3 to 6 years to build up to a half an hour and to 45 minutes and to an hour. You're going to be doing some stuff that you wrote this year, but you're going to be doing other things that have come along. And what you will find, one day you're going to have your best joke, and it's going to be the best thing that you've written yet. And then a few months later, you'll have another best joke. But you're going to get to a point where you're like, man, is this the best thing that I'm ever going to write? You get kind of nervous because you start thinking, like, how can I top this?
For sure.
But I think you'll see as time goes by, you just continue to be a better writer. As long as you keep doing it, like, you're just going to continue to come out with better material every single time.
It is coming easier to me. It's not necessarily coming better, but yeah. It's coming easier. So I had what I would consider a fine open mic for myself last night. Tomorrow is the monthly comedy competition.
Okay. Let's win it.
Okay.
No pressure. I will stop doing this podcast if you don't win the competition tomorrow.
Okay.
So.
Hey, wait a second. You're already on the books for Friday to record.
Well, I guess we'll see what happens.
All right,
maybe
fine.
People will get to hear our thoughts on the original Kings of Comedy. Maybe they won't.
Damn you. Fine. Until then, I will just be stuck in Texas.
With me.
Damn it. You want a light?
Like up there?
Yeah.
No, I'm good.
Okay.
It's very intimate in here now.
Yeah, I was thinking about lighting some candles and maybe getting a Ouija board.
Oh, God, no. I don't know. I don't want to know what my ancestors have to say to me.
Have you ever used a Ouija board?
Nope.
They are horrifying. And yet, really cool looking, I'm going to have to say.
But also fake.
You mean it's a game that...
There's no such thing as ghost, is what I'm saying.
You don't think there's a such thing as a ghost?
Correct.
I would disagree.
I mean, well, first of all, are you a Christian?
Yes.
So then you can't believe in ghosts because the spirit either goes to heaven or hell. There's no here on earth haunting a house or anything like that. Boom. Mic drop.
I would disagree because plenty of religions believe that it's not an immediate ascent into heaven or descent into hell.
But not Christianity.
Yeah, Christianity. Have you heard of a thing called purgatory?
Is that in the Bible?
It's in the Catholic religion, which is a Christian religion.
Not a real one.